From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, state lawmakers end the legislative session with a whimper. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on two political corruption trials underway in Manhattan, and state officials outline ways to increase pedestrian safety across New York. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. State lawmakers busily passed bills on the final day of the 2018 legislative session this week, but were unable to reach agreement on many major issues. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Mid-morning on the last scheduled day of the legislative session, Senate Majority Leader John Flanagan met behind closed doors with Governor Andrew Cuomo as they tried to resolve differences over a teacher evaluation bill and other topics. Flanagan, who leads the Republicans in the Senate, was asked by reporters whether any deals had been reached.
Oh, no, I wouldn't characterize that. Just ongoing discussions.
Flanagan says a plan to expand sports betting in New York, recently made legal in a Supreme Court decision, was left on the table with no agreement. The Senate GOP leader says the governor's gun control legislation is also not going to be approved before the Senate adjourns. Cuomo wants to allow teachers to petition a judge to limit a troubled student's access to guns if it's believed the student might harm themselves or others. Flanagan says Cuomo and Democrats in the legislature should adopt the Republican school safety measures instead. They offer more money for school resource officers. Cuomo enjoyed a good relationship with Senate Republicans for several years, but lately he's been in a war of words with the GOP lawmakers, saying they are beholden to Trump, while Flanagan has said Cuomo is afraid of his Democratic primary challenger, Cynthia Nixon, and has been changing his positions on issues to respond to her. Flanagan says despite that, he and the governor are trying to work together.
There are no bad feelings. We have tough words back and forth, but we're staking out positions, and we're here because we want to try and get things done.
The Senate is gridlocked currently, with 31 Republican coalition members present and 31 Democrats, presenting another obstacle to final agreements. The GOP still maintains control of the chamber because it has 32 senators, but one senator, Tom Croce, is on active duty with the military and unable to attend session. The Republican minority leader in the Assembly, Brian Kolb, says the Senate stalemate has slowed down end-of-session progress.
Obviously, the vote count and split in the Senate, so I think it's very tough to get a deal with the Senate majority.
But Kolb says Governor Cuomo has been distracted as well and seems more concerned with the growing number of challengers in the governor's race than he does with negotiating end-of-session issues. In addition to primary challenger Nixon, Cuomo also faces former Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner. She's entered the race for governor as an independent.
Cuomo's MIA because he's out campaigning and reacting to everything that Cynthia Nixon does, so I think it bodes for a very quiet end of session.
Cuomo, speaking to reporters in a conference call one day earlier, acknowledged that many of his priority items will likely not be resolved. He says he tried but failed to get them included in the state budget back in April, and he says since then the political environment has only become hotter.
The issues that are left on the table, which have been left on the table since April when we couldn't resolve them, are fundamental philosophical differences. And really, in many ways, this is an election year, and the people are going to decide these issues in the election.
Cuomo has vowed to elect more Democrats to the Senate in November, hoping that in 2019, Democrats will control the chamber and some of his issues could get passed. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, as with many issues in the country, New York often takes center stage, and immigration is one of those issues. And this week, the issue of separating children from families boiled over. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo remained at the center of that. One of the things that happened was the state now will sue the federal government over this policy. We also witnessed an op-ed in the New York Times this week by the governor, who was outraged by the policy. Certainly an issue like this, he steps out in front, and it's a national issue, so he gets national recognition.
Well, that's right. First of all, we all know that this is a guy who's interested in running for president of the United States. But right now, he has a very contentious election, a third-term election to take on. And the American people are really upset about what's happening with the immigration issue. And the governor properly writes an op-ed. It's a very good political move, saying that he is adamantly opposed to it, which is certainly something that every Democrat that I know of is having a part of. Is really a no-brainer that a governor would write an op-ed for the New York Times.
Meanwhile, adjacent to all that going on this week was the start of the so-called Buffalo Billions trial, and that involves someone named Dr. Elaine Calieros, who is the head of something called SUNY Poly. This is all around Governor Cuomo's economic development programs, and the alleged action here is bid rigging.
Well, that's right. Look, the stench from this trial is very great. I don't know that Calieros will be found guilty. You know, he had immense power in Albany. Nobody has made the assertion that he is making money himself out of all of this. And yet the assertion by the prosecution is that he wanted to curry favor with the governor, who he was afraid of. It's going to be a difficult decision for that jury, in my opinion, and we'll see what happens. Nevertheless, I do think the trial shows that Cuomo, after his best friend and the third so-called third brother in his family, who the father liked the most, was convicted on three felony counts for grafting. And we see a guilty plea from another Cuomo acolyte, Todd Howe, and then the Calieros trial. But so far, none of it has seemingly touched the governor, who is sailing ahead in the polls, both against his potential Republican opponent, Mark Molinaro, and against Cynthia Nixon. So far, the governor is in the clear. At what point the electorate starts to take this stuff seriously is another story. And remember, most New Yorkers don't really get involved in these elections till after Labor Day. So we'll have to see.
As one journalist termed this week, corruption week in Albany, because there wasn't just one trial going on. There is the retrial of ex-New York Senate leader Dean Skelos and his son on corruption charges, extortion, conspiracy, bribery, involves no-show jobs. And the original trial was sentenced to 5 years in prison. That's Dean Skelos. Son got 6.5 years, but neither of them served time because the Federal Appeals Court in Manhattan ordered a new trial. This is after the U.S. Supreme Court decided that theft of honest services needed a narrower definition.
Yeah, you got to have that quid pro quo. If you do this, I'll do that. So both the Silver trial had to be retried. That's been done now. And the Skelos trial is now taken up again. No matter what the result is, it didn't look good. We know that political favors are done all the time for people in power. And that's apparently what was going on here with Skelos asking for favors for his son and the son claiming that he wanted favors based on his relationship with his father. So even if they are not found guilty under the Supreme Court protecting its own, and that's exactly what was going on, it's infuriating that this quid pro quo rule took center stage with the Supreme Court, making sure that a lot of people who should have gone to jail didn't. Now, maybe they're looking into the crystal ball and saying, you know, there but for the grace of God goes I, who knows why they came up with it. But it's a terrible ruling, and a lot of people are getting away with it. Meantime, a kid walks into a grocery store with a gun and goes to jail for the rest of their lives. People who sold marijuana are in jail for many, many years. Yet this kind of thing goes on in our government.
it looks like now New York is moving towards legalizing marijuana after the health department came out. Howard Zucker signaled a broad turnaround for the administration. Of course, Governor Cuomo, a second-term Democrat, said recently as last year that marijuana was a gateway drug. How much of this might have to do with his move to the left as well as a financial way to deal with the state budget deficit?
Well, that could be. I suspect it has to do with what you just suggested, and that is that Cynthia Nixon came out for it. They took a look at the polls, they took a look at what people want, and they changed their mind. It's that simple. Now, if Cuomo believes it's a gateway drug, and there are those people who believe it, you would think he would stay with it, but, you know, election becomes more important than philosophy.
Speaking of philosophy, one seemed to share philosophy with the governor was Stephanie Miner. The former Syracuse mayor and top Democratic official now has announced that she's going to run for governor as an independent.
Well, she's going to get a lot of votes. She won't get enough votes to win, of course, but she'll get a lot of votes. And you have Nixon in the primary against Cuomo. There are a lot of people who think she won't win and that he'll win the primary. But if that happens, then you have a general election in which Nixon will be on the Working Families Party, at least so far, although some people in that party are saying she should get out. But if she stays in and Miner comes in and you have a Republican candidate, anything could happen, including the fact that the Republican could win.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
You're listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. State officials outlined efforts to increase pedestrian safety across New York. The Legislative Gazette's Elizabeth Hill was there and filed this report.
The CB Scene initiative was created 3 years ago by Governor Andrew Cuomo's administration. The state has since allocated millions of dollars in funding across New York to enhance pedestrian safety. Paul Karras, commissioner of the State Department of Transportation, met with area officials in Schenectady Monday to announce funding for the Electric City.
June 15th marks a two-week pedestrian enforcement initiative here in Schenectady and across New York State. Law enforcement agencies will work to not only enforce the law, but educate both motorists and pedestrians of their responsibilities under the law.
Karras announced $22 million will fund pedestrian safety projects on state roads across New York. He also said more than $40 million will be invested on local roads. $3.4 million has been allocated for Capital Region streets.
Nearly $1.5 million to the City of Albany for pedestrian signal installations and crosswalk upgrades. More than $1 million to the City of Schenectady to upgrade pedestrian facilities at 10 intersections. $500,000 to the City of Rensselaer to upgrade multiple signalized intersections. And $400,000 to the Town of Clifton Park to upgrade multiple signalized intersections at Clifton Park Center.
Ed Kosher, a Democrat, is the president of the Schenectady City Council.
With the extraordinary renaissance of our downtown, and as the city continues to develop, there is a need to upgrade our existing infrastructure to keep pace. The safety of our pedestrians, and most of all, our safety of our children, will be greatly served by these upgrades.
State Department of Motor Vehicles Executive Deputy Commissioner Terry Egan says the upgrades and the See Be Seen initiative are making streets safer.
During the two-week operation, officers in communities that have the highest rate of pedestrian-involved crashes will step up patrols in busy pedestrian corridors. They will be issuing warning notices, informative tip cards, and in some cases tickets to both motorists and pedestrians who violate the law in an effort to protect those who use our roads.
Egan says the initiative hopes to reduce pedestrian fatalities by 20% from 2013 stats by the end of 2021.
Preliminary data from the Institute of Traffic Safety Management and Research shows that in 2017, the number of pedestrian fatalities is down almost 26%. In fact, the number is the lowest it's been in almost 10 years. And pedestrian fatalities in New York are lower than the national average.
New York State Department of Health Deputy Commissioner Sally Dreslin says traffic-related injuries are the leading cause of injury-related death, the second leading cause of injury-related hospitalizations, and the third leading cause of injury-related emergency department visits.
From 2011 to 2014, injuries to pedestrians in New York resulted in an average of 12,000 emergency department visits, 3,000 inpatient hospitalizations, and 300 deaths.
Dreslin says those numbers are decreasing under the See Be Seen initiative. She also detailed the health department's new multilingual print and media campaign.
The public service announcement that was created as part of this campaign will begin airing in the coming weeks and focuses on the importance of correct motorist and pedestrian behavior.
See Be Seen runs from June 15th through the 28th. Reporting from Schenectady for the Legislative Gazette, I'm Elizabeth Hill.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. As the summer season sets in, the Northeast is on alert for ticks. The Cary Institute of Ecosystem Studies recently hosted a panel discussion on Lyme and other tick-borne diseases. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn was there.
Democratic New York State Assemblymember Dede Barrett co-hosted the forum June 14th at the Millbrook-based Cary Institute. It comes as a Cary scientist is in the midst of a project in Dutchess County while Barrett is working on legislation and raising awareness. It was part of Barrett's Get Ticked Off social media campaign to push for legislative, policy, and budgetary actions to grapple with the epidemic of Lyme and tick-borne diseases.
It's a huge issue, and I think that New York should be doing a much better job of leading around this because, as you saw on those maps, the density here. And we've been frustrated because I think often, we feel like the recognition of chronic Lyme, the pervasiveness of it, the frustrations that people have, the lack of Lyme-literate doctors, none of that is necessarily on the radar screen of all of our leaders in the health and environmental communities. And it is an environmental issue, and that's why I was so happy to do this at the Cary Institute.
Dr. Rick Osfeld is a disease ecologist with the Cary Institute and one of the panelists. He spoke about the Tick Project, a five-year study with Bard College that runs through 2021 and has recruited 951 households from 24 neighborhoods throughout Dutchess County, which has one of the nation's highest Lyme disease infection rates.
And now we're fully in the swing of things where we are pestering them every 2 weeks to ask them whether they or anyone in their household, including dogs and cats, have found ticks on them or gotten a case of tick-borne disease. We're sampling ticks in their yards, both the ones that are crawling around trying to bite them and the ones that have found like a mouse or a chipmunk host of some kind. And we're now in year two of the tick-killing interventions. So things are going well. We don't have results.
and here's why.
One of our interventions, this tick-killing fungus, acts right away within a week or two of spraying it on the yard. But the other one takes about a year before it's effective because you put out these bait boxes. That kills the baby ticks that are on mice and chipmunks and shrews in one summer. And those are the ticks that, if they survive, will come out the next year as infected nymphs capable of making us sick. So if we're killing, if they were effective in 2017, we should see vastly reduced tick populations in 2018. That's what we're testing right now.
He says the first results will be ready at the end of this year's tick season, around late summer, early fall, on the impact on ticks. Ostfeld expects results pertaining to tick-borne illnesses to take another year or two.
Based on samples of tens of thousands of ticks that we've looked at, about 1 in 3 of the nymph stage ticks carries the Lyme disease pathogen.
Ostfeld says the nymph is responsible for most cases of Lyme and other tick-borne illnesses. It was an answer to a question from Rhinebeck resident Lawrence Miller.
I mean, it was just like I said, it was to allay my freak-out factor because, as far as I'm concerned, the Hudson Valley is paradise. I mean, I've been here 16 years. I do not intend to ever leave, except for the ticks. It's my one, you know, like black mark on the area, literally.
Some audience members asked whether they could purchase MET-52, the fungal spray. Ostfeld offered two reasons why that would be difficult.
We're still in the midst of testing whether it works when deployed in this way. So it's hard to recommend on the basis of the small-scale field trials that have been done when we're doing what we think is the definitive experiment. But the other reason is that the supply has crashed, apparently because marijuana growers out in California are using it as the spray of choice to kill the pests that bother their crops in their pot-growing greenhouses.
Barrett, who represents portions of Columbia and Dutchess counties, says she is working on various pieces of legislation.
So we have this bill, which would be a study bill looking at insurance coverage and costs around that, and you know, and patient experiences and patient needs, and I think, you know, that's something that I'm hoping that we'll be able to get past, because starting this, at least if you start it with a study, then you know there's an opportunity to sort of explore all these directions without everybody, you know, getting defensive. So that's, you know, that's our goal at this point. We also have this. The bill that calls for the state parks and recreational areas to have signs.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1825. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.